Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What's it like to be a police officer in today's urban environment? It's not ever an easy job, and today it may be tougher than ever. We'll hear more in part of our We Live Here podcast a little bit later. And we'll also check in with St. Louis Public Radio's man in Jefferson City, Marshall Griffin. But first, the recent release of hundreds of young kidnapped girls, boys, and women in Nigeria is grounds for rejoicing in that country. But many more remain missing, maybe well over 1,000. A Nigerian-born academic is here to tell us what it all means and portends. With me in studio is Benjamin Ola Akande, Dean of the George Herbert Walker School of Business and Technology at Webster University. Dean Akande, nice to have you back with us again.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
And it's nice to have some good news for a change.
Absolutely.
Last time we talked, it was just after those girls had been abducted from their school. That was in April, I guess, a year ago. But better news this past week.
Yeah, what happened this last week, I think, is an effort of the intensive military work and intelligence that have occurred over time, probably over the last month or so, prior to the just recently concluded Nigerian election, where the government took it upon themselves to really go out and search and find the Boko Haram extremist. And they did. And in finding them, they discovered, they fought them fearlessly, particularly in an area that is sort of north of Maiduguri. And they went in there and were able to stop the insurgents. But then they discovered something very unique. There's a forest called the Sambisa Forest. It is a forest that is within a desert. It is a very thick, lush forest in the northern part of Nigeria. And it is such a unique place because it is sort of fortress of sort. It shields you from the intensity of the sun and the desert-like condition. And when you enter that forest, you feel like you're in a very different place, a cool place, a comfortable place. And that has been the place where the insurgents have sort of camped out, sort of used as their base. When they got there, they found scores of women and children that were there. Nigerian troops.
Yeah.
And according to some senior officers reported in some of the public medias, they described the scene as very surreal. When they tried to approach the group, they were shocked because some of the women were actually shot back at them. It was later found that some of these women are folks that have been taken hostage over time, families and wives and children of some of the Boko Haram insurgents, just a combination of sorts. And we know that 12 women fighters and 7 soldiers died in the fierce firefight, and that they also discovered that some of the women were pregnant, some of the children, some of the girls were pregnant. They first reported this rescue of almost 300 women and children in the Sambisa Forest. And it remains unclear if some of the women have willingly joined the Boko Haram or are family members of the fighters, but the fact is that they've all been rescued. The Sambisa Forest is a very large place, and they're not done yet. And they are anticipating and expecting and hoping that as they continue to make their way inside this forest, that they will find others, particularly they'll be able to find the girls. But that's a daily update that we were listening and open for intently.
There have been all sorts of rumors over the past year about those girls in particular, that where they have been and where they've been taken, and they've been spread out, and some have been recovered. It's a little unclear, I think, to most of us here, exactly how much we know about their fate.
According to reports, we know that some of them have been recovered. But the majority of them have not. It is very disheartening when you think about the fact that you're looking at a country probably half the size of Texas or even less that could easily been cleared out to find these young women. But the reality is that it has not been a coordinated effort by the federal government of Nigeria. You had an election process going on that sort of distracted the situation. And then you had a lot of false alarms where they would report that they had negotiated the release of the girls And for whatever reason, the girls never showed up. And I think, indeed, there were some ransom exchanged. There was some money paid. But for now, we're still waiting on the girls to show up.
It's not anticipated in any case that they would be together as a group. They've probably been dispersed somehow.
I think clearly that the chances of finding the girls in totality is very slim to none. What you may find, if you find pockets of them, you know, that have been split up with different groups of the Boko Haram, you'll find some of them that maybe were able to escape and just been undercover for some time. But to be able to find the group as we saw the pictures in the early days, I think would be a far stretch to be able to characterize that.
Well, let's back up just a little bit and make sure that everybody knows what we're talking about when we talk about Boko Haram. Tell us exactly what this group is and what it is seeking to do in Nigeria.
The Boko Haram group is a group of renegade fighters that are claiming that they are trying to take out any sort of Western influence on education and to embrace sort of a caliphate, an Islamic state. And they have done so coming out of the northern part of Nigeria, and they've done it by sort of taking over real estate, city by city, sort of going down the road. And in doing so, they have caused significant amount of harm and murder. The numbers are in the thousands. They have engaged such devices as using human suicide missions, of which many of them were girls, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, and again, which feeds into the issue that could these be some of the Chipot girls that have now been used as human suicide missions?
Chipot being the school that we're talking
about. Yeah, the Chipot girls there. And then the remarkable thing about this is this. They're claiming that they're Muslim. They're claiming that they are trying to create a state that doesn't have any Western influence. But yet, when you look at the body of work that we've seen with this organization, they are killing more Muslims per capita than they are killing others. So they're being indiscriminate. They're killing Muslims. They're killing Christians. And the reality is that we think that they're using this guise of sort of an Islamic war, a jihad, as a context for either fighting the government or trying to make a strong statement. And I think that even though we've seen this sort of military adventurism take place over time, it is my contention that I really believe that the root cause to this problem is discipline and also having some sort of oversight over a bigger social issue in Nigeria, which is a significant level of unemployment. Mm-hmm. 50% unemployment rate for college graduates and young people. And so when you have that kind of environment in play, what happens is it's easier to recruit people to engage in these sort of adventures. And in part, that has been their recruitment mode of finding a lot of these young people to participate.
We see the same dynamic at work in Somalia with Al-Shabaab, and we also see it in connection with ISIS and other parts of the Middle East. Is there any indication that the Boko Haram is somehow associated with these other groups?
Well, you would recall that just a couple of months ago, they declared their allegiance to ISIS. And that was a scary moment for a lot of Nigerians because they realized what ISIS means and what they do. And that, in fact, we even saw evidence of them sort of copycat. Mm-hmm. The beheading of Nigerian soldiers that were captured, the massive killings of villagers in the villages that they had taken over. They declared their allegiance for ISIS, but what occurred was that ISIS did not embrace them in any sense. And I think that announcement by association was another attempt by Boko Haram to try to put fear into the hearts of Nigerians, particularly those in the northern part of Nigeria.
The conditions that those young women, and there were some boys also rescued, older women, girls, and boys rescued. The conditions under which they were held were just awful, awful. It's just indescribable almost.
It is terrible when you think of young men, young boys that have been in that kind of condition, you think about the psychological impact that it will have on them for the rest of their lives. And that these young men, these young boys, were boys in which they, in most likely cases, saw their fathers and their brothers, older brothers, executed or either beheaded, and then taken prisoner by the Boko Harams. And then the women, many of them that have been raped and abused in ways that are incomprehensible to us. This is a war that is not going to end with the military solution. This is a war that's going to have a reverberating impact many, many years to come. But I am glad that the federal government of Nigeria is taking a concerted effort to take this to the Boko Haram. And I'm hoping that within the next month or so, you've got to be able to capture and essentially eliminate the leadership and then begin to cultivate and to win back the support of the entire northern part of Nigeria. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge moving forward.
The last time you were here, you said that one of the reasons, aside from the obvious humanitarian concerns, one of the reasons that we in places like St. Louis should be concerned is because the Boko Haram is moving southward from their place of origin in the north, and south is where the oil is. If they get control of the oil, that will have an impact here because prices will go up. It'll be harder to get.
You know, you're right. And at that time, I was very fearful that they were moving sort of beyond the equilibrium line of sorts that divides the north and the south. And luckily, and I think fortunately, that was averted. There have not been any sort of activity in the southern part, southeastern part, where the oil wells and are located. And so I think the government realized what material impact and economic devastation this would have, not only on Nigeria, but on all the oil producers and consumers around the world. And we, America is by far the largest of all those oil consumers, and it shows off particularly in the prices of our gasoline as we drive our cars around. And so clearly I think we've averted that, but more importantly, the humanitarian impact of this is what we have to gear up for, and to hopefully that America will play some role in being able to help in the recovery effort.
I want to pick up on that point, and we will when we come back. My guest in studio is Dean Benjamin Ola Okande. He is the dean of the George Herbert Walker School of Business and Technology at Webster University. He's a Nigerian-born American citizen, and we're talking about the number of women, boys, and young girls who have been abducted in Nigeria. Many of them have been returned. Many, however, are still in the custody of the Boko Haram, the terrorist organization there. We'll be back to continue our conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Welcome back to our conversation with Dean Benjamin Ola Okande of Webster University, talking about the situation in Nigeria, principally the abduction of those many school children and women and young boys that that we have been talking about. Dean Okande, is the Nigerian military the only force involved in tracking down Boko Haram? Do you have any help, or is there any help, I should say, coming from other countries?
You know, that's a very interesting question, because the reason why we've been successful in stopping the incursion of Boko Haram has not been the Nigerian military. To be honest with you, it's been the military of the armies of Chad, Niger Republic. Those are the ones that basically took these folks head on and beat the bejeebers out of them.
Crossing borders.
Yeah, they came into the northern part of Nigeria. Mm-hmm. The armies of Chad and Mali and Niger, and essentially fought them hard. And then after recovering the cities, the towns that the Boko Harams had taken over, waited for the Nigerian military to show up and to take victory. And so what we've seen here is a flip. Nigeria used to be the leading military force in the West African theater. That is no longer the case. Now you've got these other countries that have become extremely aggressive and understanding the implications that it has for their countries, and come on board to challenge Boko Haram directly.
They're next if they don't bring this thing to a stop.
Absolutely.
What about the use of U.S. drones? There was some talk that might be brought into play at some point. Has that happened, to your knowledge?
I don't think so, because I think what had happened was that the outgoing government of Goodluck Jonathan the outgoing president of Nigeria, had refused American aid and military support. Why? I don't know. But it was a bad call on his part, because essentially you would have had access to the very sophisticated technology of drones, which essentially finds you wherever you are. And I think that missed opportunity may have extended the war effort to the fact that we had to fight a sort of a conventional military strategy as opposed to the modern military strategy of using drones. But I think clearly that was another very bad call by the outgoing government in Nigeria.
I should have asked you this before, but just to clarify in my own mind and our listeners' mind, how big is the Zambesa forest? It's obviously big. You alluded to where it is in the desert, but can we equate it with anything we might be able to help us imagine how big it is?
Without being very specific, I would say that the forest probably the size of a modern city. A city without, of course, without all the infrastructure, it's just a big forest. I think if you look at the Zambesa forest, you're looking at multiple miles long and very broad, and of which it is unnavigable navigational territory. There's no real map. You can't map quest it to try to see where is where, because it's essentially just a forest, a very thick forest, and it provides for a number of hiding places of sorts for the militants. But it is a very large forest.
I'll point to another thing that you said the last time you were here, and you've kind of suggested this in our conversation today. You said, my long-term prognosis for Boko Haram is that they are a nuisance, they are an obstruction, it is not going to last. Do you think, given the success the military has had recently, that they're on their way out?
I would definitely make the prediction that Boko Haram would cease to exist in short order, and it will be quenched, it will be silent, but it will happen through the current military intervention that we're seeing. It is also going to be necessary that in the aftermath of eliminating Boko Haram, that you also make sure that you address some of the derivatives that would come as a result of this. There's a significant level of distrust for the government. The conversation needs to be had in terms of what are the issues in which government can come back to address some of the concerns of the local northern citizens. And I think that we also need to address the unemployment issue that I've indicated earlier. But if we can defeat them militarily, I think the next challenge would be how do we address some of the social problems that may have allowed participation by so many young men in this very horrific war.
But you know, the situation that you're talking about, the kind of situation you're talking about, is not peculiar only to Nigeria. We look at Northern Africa and what's been going on since the Arab Spring. I mentioned Somalia a little while ago. You know, one has to wonder what is going on in Africa and what kind of risk exists in that continent right now, given all that's going on, the upheaval, the turmoil that's taking place.
You know, it's worrisome, because you have a continent with significant amount of potential, an economic oasis of sorts, but yet because of bad leadership and lack of it over time, it has not been able to even meet its potential. And so you have a high, double-digit unemployment. You've got social unrest. You've got a lot of factors that actually lead individuals that are not engaged in anything meaningful to try to find activities. And so those activities become insurgents and war, and where you find justification to enable you to find something to do. And in this particular case, I think that has aided the work of the Boko Harams. But I think with the new government of General Muhammad Buhari, we anticipate that those things will begin to turn around, and perhaps he will give a new sense of hope, not just for Nigeria, but perhaps for the rest of Africa.
Is there a role for the United States in Nigeria?
I think there is. I think there is. I think it begins with the United States President, President Obama, being very clear that the United States is paying attention to what's going on in Nigeria and that they support the newly elected government, the newly democratically elected government. And I would also like to say this. I would hope that perhaps President Obama would make a trip to Nigeria, a country that he has yet to visit, the largest country in Africa, largest economy in Africa, for him to be able to stand up and to say that America is with Nigeria as we fight this insurgency. They may be symbolic, but there are symbolisms that will go a long way towards enhancing the morale and increasing the level of appreciation for the challenges ahead.
Well, he's going to be sort of in the neighborhood in the next couple of weeks. He's going to Kenya, as I understand it. That's not exactly next door, but at least it's in the same ballpark.
Well, that is it. And I would even venture to predict that that the president may make a very quick stopover in Abuja, Nigeria, on his way to his ancestral country of Kenya. And that prediction is I think will be a good move on the president's part to stop over, say a few words, and then move on.
We shall see. We only have 1 minute left. Very quickly, what about the role of China in Africa? Its presence is certainly deeply felt.
China has become Africa. They are in the neighborhood. They are acquired significant amount of land and real estate. Africa has become the fruit basket for the new China. I'll tell you one thing that was really interesting. Last time I was in Nigeria, which is in December, right into a Chinese guy that spoke Yoruba, my language, fluently. And it took me because he was doing it with the accented type of syntax that I was very, very just blown away with. And that just tells you they're not only there to do business, they've understood the importance of culture and language, and they're making it work.
Well, Dr. Benjamin Okande, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be watching with intense interest what's going on in your former country, I should say. I guess
yes.
It's never a former country per se, but now that you're an American citizen, I guess we can put it that way. Thank you so much for being with us and bringing us up to speed on this story.
My pleasure.